Hello, this is Barbara Van Dalen. Thank you for joining me today on Inner Space. Inner Space is a special program that helps us pay attention to our own emotional health and well-being and the health and well-being of those we love. For this episode of Inner Space, we're talking about how the business sector is joining our efforts to change the culture of mental health. My guests are both unique innovators and sheroes who have, over the years, helped pave the way for corporate leaders to realize the connection between emotional well-being and productivity. My first guest, Nicole Gardner, is selflessly and passionately invested in improving the lives of veterans by harnessing the tremendous resources and expertise available within the business sector. We met through a mutual contact, a prior guest on this show, Dr. Keita Franklin, who leads the Department of Veterans Affairs suicide prevention efforts. Nicole and I became fast friends and quickly set about doing good together. Nicole is a visionary and a builder. She recognizes potential opportunities when she sees them, and she's able to leverage her expertise and the relationships she's developed over her long and impressive career at IBM to turn opportunities into action. Because of Nicole's efforts, IBM is partnering with the Campaign to Change Direction during a week to change direction in June. Specifically, IBM is hosting the first ever Change Direction Jam, June 11th through the 13th. Visit changedirection.org to learn how you can join the jam as we share ideas and information, all in the service of changing the culture of mental health. I sat down with Nicole to talk about her career, her family, and her passion to bring more emotional health and well-being to our military and veteran communities. We're here in Washington, D.C. I'm thrilled to have one of my dear friends, Nicole Gardner, stop in to have a little chat about our inner space. Thank you, Nicole, for joining me.
Thank you, Barbara, so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
So let's start with, we met each other through a shared passion and a shared focus of work in the veteran space. So talk about, and then we're going to talk about sort of what you're doing now, but when we met, talk about that work, that project, and then we'll go from there.
So when we met, I was working on a project for the Department of Veterans Affairs, trying to help the VA provide innovative services for transitioning service members and veterans who are coming out and struggling with getting their feet firmly planted on the ground in order to thrive and live their best life. Mm-hmm. We did some terrific work for the former Secretary Bob McDonald around different coping mechanisms and therapies and approaches for PTSD and for traumatic brain injury.
And that was prior to the project that IBM was,
right.
was that you were leading IBM with the VA when we met.
Exactly. Okay. That was the ignition. Those were the seeds that got laid that actually provided the vision for what we decided to launch into. So we hosted a program for the secretary. And in the process of doing that, as we were listening very, very carefully to both presentations as well as a hackathon we did on the second day, what the struggles were that people were encountering in terms of navigating resources that were available, understanding how to develop new approaches that would get traction and that veterans would be able to access easily. There was definitely less understanding of how technology could help facilitate, and we walked away saying, wow. Number one, we didn't realize that there was such a vacuum out there. And number two, there was a tremendous discussion around suicide during that as a byproduct of all of these as an undesirable outcome. And we became aware of some of the growing trends and very concerned. IBM has a very large veteran workforce. We're very proud to be a very good employer and wanting to attract veterans for all their skills and their leadership skills, and their team and collaborative work styles. And those veterans had experienced some of the things that we were talking about. So pull it all together, and we asked ourselves the question, what can we do to make it a better place? And that ignited a project to use technology to help veterans navigate to live their best life, deal with their mental health issues, as much as they're dealing with their physical fitness issues. And that's how we got started.
That's how we met.
That's how we met.
And you have a personal connection to the veteran community. Talk about that.
I do. My mother was the executive director of an organization called the American Veterans Committee, and it was an NGO that was made up mostly of the Great Generation, the World War One, World War Two veterans. There were also some Vietnam veterans. And from the time I was a little kid, old enough to sit at a table and hand somebody a pencil, I was helping to facilitate veteran conversations. She used to convene big national conferences. She actually was the impetus for building the Women's Memorial at Arlington Cemetery. So veterans have been a part of my life since I was awake. And I just feel like it's a part of me, you know, trying to help.
And when you look back at that time, you know, you and I both sort of grew up with parents and grandparents who could have served or did serve in World War II, and Korean War, etc. Our society didn't do such a great job of talking about these things, even though there was a lot of recognition that men who served, mostly men, came home with these challenges. We still didn't really talk about it very comfortably, did we?
No, we didn't. I think there's a couple of reasons. People in the service, past, present, and future, they're all about everybody else. When you join the service, you're serving others. You're a part of a mission that's so much bigger than yourself. And that whole ethos permeates them to the cellular level. So they're all about everybody else. They don't want to think that they need help.
Right.
Because that would be a weakness, or they would perceive
or
it as
selfish,
a weakness.
Even, right?
Or even selfish. Yes. And that is not what these men and women are about.
Yes.
They're about protecting our country, protecting all of us. So there's a contradiction there right away.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing is that as a society, we don't cope well with vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health is one way. Cancer is another.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of disability.
Or difference.
Yeah. Any kind of difference. We don't deal well with vulnerability. And so when you put those two together, that's not a good combo.
No, it's not.
Talkative about it, yeah.
So you were with us in London. Thank you for coming. It was a fantastic series of events, conversations. And as you know, that work is all about changing the culture. And we began that work really with a focus on the military and veteran in mind, and thinking about how can we change the culture so that people can talk more comfortably. And it was also a recognition that this is not just a military or veteran challenge or issue, meaning emotional health and well-being. And we were talking about this before we started today, off camera, that, you know, everyone has a story, don't they?
I think that's one of my biggest ahas in doing this work. So I did approach it from a place of feeling that I know the veteran story. I'm the daughter of a World War II vet.
Mm-hmm.
I am the wife of a Vietnam era vet. I am the sister-in-law of a vet. I am the cousin of a vet.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't served myself, but I feel I've served in other ways. And so that's not a surprise. But what was interesting to me, and I think it probably hit me hardest when we were in London together, mm-hmm. as I listened so carefully to the wide spectrum of people who came forward to tell their stories,
mm-hmm.
and to the realization that this is something everyone has a connection to.
Yes.
Everyone has a story. And every time I talk about what we're working on, all of a sudden somebody, either I know them well, but I thought I knew them well.
Right.
Or even if I don't know them well, they'll say, oh my God, this is incredible. And then they'll tell me their story.
Yes.
And it's 100%. I've never spoken to anybody who didn't have a story. And so I feel woke.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that it was that pervasive. And of course, the CDC studies that have come out and the VA studies that have come out in the last year and a half, 2 years, is waking a lot of people up that
yes.
this is a real population health crisis.
Yes.
And it is not isolated to one cohort or one type of person.
Or one nation.
Or one nation. It is a worldwide, ubiquitous, pervasive problem. And I don't want to turn a negative into a positive, but the good side of that is that if it affects everybody, shouldn't we talk about it?
Yes.
So we can support each other?
Yes.
I mean, because as soon as the walls come down, all of a sudden you can sort of see the relief in somebody's eyes. Yes. Oh my God, I'm not different. You've done this. You're doing dealing with this too.
Yes.
Wow. What is your experience? You know, it's a totally different vibe.
Yes.
Once the walls come down.
And they do come down when people share. And we were talking also about the impact on families, that that's another reason why this, the change that we're working on is so important, right? Because
absolutely.
It may not be you, it may be somebody you love, but it's somebody you, if it's someone you love and you don't feel like you can share with your work and say to your, you know, colleagues or your supervisor, this is going on, I need to take care of them. That puts tremendous stress on that person, doesn't it?
It does. And so if I put my corporate hat on
Please.
For a moment and I think about workforce optimization and performance,
mm-hmm.
If your brain and your heart are disengaged from what you're doing because you're worried about hiding it or you're worried about what's happening about, you know, at home, if you can't be transparent about what you're going through and the support you might need in order to continue to either continue to work or to take the leave of absence that's needed to deal with the issue so that you can come back full force, then you have a serious problem. And if this is everybody's story, think about the productivity we're losing.
And we know that,
in
right?
In the workforce.
Yes.
So one of the things that really struck me about our London experience was some very, very senior executives who came forward and acknowledged their mental health struggles
mm-hmm.
and taking time off of work. And oh, by the way, they're still senior executives.
Right.
They took time off to take care of themselves and to get better and come back even more loyal, even more focused,
mm-hmm.
even more committed to making sure that they perform and give back because they've been taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, it's not a paternalistic thing. It's a performance thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want people to really be able to commit to their work, they need to feel good on all dimensions.
Right. And if somebody had cancer,
exactly.
You'd expect them to take time.
Of course.
Right?
But, you know, I think that that's a really good analogy because 20 years ago, if you had cancer, you didn't talk about it at
mm-hmm.
work. You were afraid of being fired.
Yep.
You were afraid of being let go. And now, of course, the mere idea that something like that would happen is not fathomable for most people. And I'm sure we'll get there with mental health, but I feel like that's kind of where we are. I also think we're kind of where we were with AIDS in the early 80s when
mm-hmm.
it was really starting to become visible
mm-hmm.
and people were so afraid. They thought you could get it from breathing air or shaking hands.
Yes.
And it took some very high level, very visible celebrities and famous people to be courageous
mm-hmm.
and to show that that was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that enabled the money to go to research, people to be supported in their lives so that it wouldn't become like this horrific, glaring thing that made them so different and inaccessible
mm-hmm.
to the world. So I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And the work you're doing to bring it forward, to make it visible, to help people develop a dialogue,
mm-hmm.
your five signs make it a really open and easier conversation because there's a vocabulary. There's a beginning of understanding of how to talk about what's going on. And there's lots of efforts out there, and I think that's all going to come together. But it's going to take time.
It's going to take time. And you mentioned, and thank you, about the five signs. We're thrilled and excited to be working on a lot of these different slices together because that is how we get stuff done.
Right.
You mentioned celebrities being courageous. Anyone can be courageous. And I think I'm seeing through you as you talk more openly about the work that we're doing and why we're doing it. You're seeing just everyday folks in your own company saying, by the way, and they're being courageous. It's incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that happened when we started our project was one of our very senior people is actually a Navy captain. And he's also, he's a Navy captain in the reserves, but, and he's a retired, and he's lost at least one, somebody under his command and one of his best friends.
Oh.
And
to suicide?
Yes. Uh-huh. And when he heard about what we were doing, he like rushed in. And one of the things that he's been doing is sharing his story and how he feels about it and how he wishes he had been able to understand and recognize what was going on. And he wished his buddy could have spoken to him and let him know and that the end was near. He has a story he tells about the fact that his buddy was telling him that he felt like he was made of building blocks and he was coming apart faster than the doctors could put him back together again. And I think the fact that this man, who's a really strong, I mean, he's a tough guy, has been willing to be vulnerable and to let us see how deeply hurt and sad that he is about that story. People just, you know, flock like, yes. Oh my God, you know, I have a story too.
Right.
Or, even just getting support. So you're right. There are heroes and shiros everywhere.
I love the shiros. I haven't heard that before.
Oh,
I like that.
That's my word.
I like
shiros.
That.
We are shiros.
Yes. I touch a shiro.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that.
I will.
Trying to get it to trend.
I like that.
I want to thank Nicole for all she's doing to help our veterans and their families and for her efforts to bring the conversation about emotional health and well-being to the corporate sector. I'm pleased to share that because of the work of Nicole and other powerful leaders in the space, like my next guest, not only are executives becoming more interested in discussions about emotional health and well-being in general, they're actually inviting organizations like Given Hour into their boardrooms to bring new resources and tools to their workforce. I travel next to McLean, Virginia to meet up with a very dear friend who I met many years ago during the early years of Given Hour. Like Nicole, she's using her powerful position in the corporate sector to change the culture of mental health for the clients she serves and for her own company's workforce. Andrea and Sarah has been a force at Booz Allen Hamilton for over 20 years, and her work as a strategic leader working with the Department of Defense led us to meet at a critical time in my organization's development. We became good friends and began working together across projects to provide education and support to service members and their families. I'm proud to say that Andrea was one of the first people I invited to join a steering committee I was forming to help me build what eventually became the Campaign to Change Direction. Andrea is incredibly smart and very humble. Because of her commitment to this work, Booz Allen Hamilton and other companies are significantly changing the way they address emotional pain and suffering at work.
When we met, we were both at an event in somewhere, not here.
Chicago. Right?
In Chicago.
Yep.
And as I recall, we were both at an event focused on veterans and looking at how to solve the challenges and issues that we were seeing coming out of the wars at that time, right? And you were facilitating, right?
Yeah, it was a discussion specifically about how do we help with reintegration.
Okay.
And it was holistically, economically, physically, emotionally, you know, how do we help those who have served?
And I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again that I was so impressed with you then. And a little bit uncertain, you know, here I am, mental health professional, leading this nonprofit, and you were there in your role as part of the Booz Allen organization, and I had never really encountered, first of all, I hadn't encountered very many women in positions like yours, but you were so interested in understanding what I was doing, how I saw the landscape. Do you remember sort of what you thought about the work I was doing way back then?
What came to me is when, and I was there at that time, I was leading our defense health business, and we were working with the Department of Defense looking at how do we introduce advancements in traumatic brain injury research as well as post-traumatic stress. And so my role was there coming from that perspective. But what you offered to me, and I don't know if you know this, is it's not just the Department of Defense that has to address this or the VA. It actually is the community. So what you were symbolic to me at that moment was there are community providers that need to come together with community, the federal government, the local governments, and corporations. And that was the moment. You showed me your one pager about what you were doing, and I thought, we've got to connect somehow.
And in 2012 or 13, probably the beginning, early 13, I asked you if you would become part of a steering committee. The request had come from the vice president's office, and it was in response to the Sandy Hook shootings.
Yes, I remember when you called, sent a note first, and then you called. And my first response to you was, Barbara, I'm not a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. I support that work for the government, but that's not who I am. I bring them to the, and you said to me, Andrea, I don't need you for mental health. I have that experience. Mm-hmm. I have all of the clinicians. And, you know, truthfully, you asked and I said, okay. And I thought, I'm just going to do this. Because again, we were all facing this crisis of Sandy Hook was one of many, not as many as today. But at that time, there was, we needed to be doing something to help those who are struggling. And you just said, let's try this. And that's why I did it.
For me, it was a wonderful experience of bringing together you and some other folks to, really create the structure, the idea behind what became the Campaign to Change Direction. We got together every month, no matter what we were all doing, and we were all busy traveling, but we made the commitment. Clearly, that small group believed in this mission to come up with some response, and you brought so much perspective, just perspective from the corporate space, yes, but just the just living, just having kids, growing up, facing challenges. What was it like for you to be part of that little group that created what is now this international effort?
I think after I get over my anxiousness of being someone who is not an expert, I learned so much. And the leaders you chose to be part of that smaller group came from such different backgrounds. We all brought our own perspective. But as a new mom, and I was a relatively new mom, I was very concerned for how I'm helping my children kind of grow and develop, and what kind of mechanisms will safeguard their life.
So cool. It was a great experience. And then we got the wild idea to see if we could bring it into the corporate sector.
Yep.
Talk about that. Talk about what that was like, and sort of how that has evolved, because not only did it begin with your own organization, but then your organization has really helped by encouraging and championing this work for other corporations. Mm-hmm. But talk about that initial, when we brought it in to the company and said, hey, we have a great idea.
So timing is everything. And at the time that you asked me to be part of this, what would become the campaign, I was being asked here at Booz Allen to consider being a champion for a new program called Power Up. And it was a program aimed at how do we empower our employees to have wellness. And I wrote to our chief people officer at the time, and I said, Betty, I'd love to do this, but if I do this, I'd like us to consider holistic wellness. And she said, I agree, but we're not there yet, Andrea. Will you still be a champion? And I said, of course. Mm-hmm. But I knew in my head that we had to get there. But I also knew that it would take time. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the door that opened. Mm-hmm. And I decided I'm going to take that and see if I can help Booz Allen expand into holistic. But again, this was still early in 2013. So
yes,
it was very early.
And I remember that the focus for the wellness, the Power Up, was on great things like Zumba and things like that.
Yep.
The meetings that I participated in with your leadership, some people were very interested, others were very apprehensive, there was clearly concern. What do you think the concern was about back then? Because it's shifted now.
It has.
What was that?
And we asked you to come in many times.
Yes.
And you sat patiently and listened. And I think what you were hearing was two things. So physical wellness, physical issues you can see. We can identify how to get people help. But on the emotional side, people are very nervous about what we can't see and not sure about how to help. and the liability of identifying someone who has an emotional wellness issue, and then what does that mean for us as a firm? And I think what you saw was hesitation by not knowing what to do with this new information, because at that time, companies weren't talking about it.
Right. And it was only, that was only 4 years, 5 years ago.
It's 5 years ago.
It's amazing, right?
Yep.
What's happening. Okay, so a lot of work, a lot of conversations, and then I want to sort of direct us to two internal events that I think really underscore, demonstrate what's changed. This gathering of leadership that you invited me to in the first year, we actually presented, and it was quite a process to work through how our team was going to present with you, some other Booz Allen leaders, me from the outside, and we did that, and people's reactions to that. And then a year later, the same event. Talk about the difference between those two and sort of what was happening inside this company, behind the scenes, between year one and year two of that event.
I think year one, we were trying something, right? We didn't know how it would work. There was support from our CEO, from our chief personnel, people officer, that we should do this. But again, the response was, let's be cautious because we don't know what the community is going to be willing to accept or hear. And so I think year one was, let's try and see who comes. So almost launch it and see who will join us. And I think we were surprised by how many people joined us worldwide.
Yes.
There was interest.
There was interest.
The room was full.
Yeah.
But we had video going all over the world. And they had like launch parties to kind of talk. Year two, I think we were then as a leadership team embracing it. And not just a few of us, not two or three. But the entire leadership team said, this is what we need to do. And we need to roll this out, starting with our leaders and go broad. And we started with your signs, the five signs. And that is, I still remember the first email that went out, and that was 2016. And that was the five signs. We kept it simple. This is what we need, what I need to do as a leader. I need to understand the signs. And it, and I'm not diagnosing, I'm not doing anything, I'm just asking someone if they need help.
Right, and being compassionate.
And I think that's the difference between year one and year two.
Yes.
Is that every one of us, even a non-medical, non-clinician, can help.
How hard is it, given that there's so much going on in your work day, because I sometimes, you know, this is my work. My work is all about these conversations and encouraging people to share and, you know, removing barriers. But corporations, they have their work. How hard is it to continue the conversation so that when something comes up, when someone is hurting, that people are comfortable or they know what to do, or to keep the momentum going? How hard is that?
I think it's hard. I think it's, you know, it's keeping it front and center. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can creatively keep the conversation moving. But I'll be honest with you, if it's about engagement. And so we're always looking for ways that we can continue to engage with employees. And it's just reminders that, you know, these are the things you should be thinking about, talking about. And the most important thing for us, Barbara, was what do you do with the information once you get it? So how do you get that individual help? I think a lot of us just didn't, you know, we know of EAP, but it kind of falls flat at that point. We don't know what to do with it. And I think through working with you and other leaders, you've kind of taught us about how to approach it, how to help people get the help they need, and how to let them continue their work with us and our clients in a meaningful way.
I think it makes people better leaders. Do you see it?
Yes.
I feel that. And I think people, leaders feel that. It's almost like now they have another tool to use with their people.
That's right. Yeah, I think it, again, connection is critical for us. I mean, in any people business, you need to connect with people. And I think this allows, you know, kind of opens the door to allow for a conversation that I would say prior to 2013 would have never been heard in any corporation.
Well, it
almost silenced.
Yes.
Not even not heard, purposely silenced.
Yes. Certainly not encouraged.
Right.
And in a way not wanted. And someone said to me the other day, and I'm curious your perspective on this. Someone said to me the other day, it's sort of like the light bulb thing, and they said, oh my gosh, you are, what you're doing, what this effort is all about, is actually encouraging people in the corporate space to undo what we've learned about you park your personal life there, you walk in, you don't deal with any of that, you don't ask people, you don't get involved, because you are working as if those two
right.
can be completely right. separate. Do you agree with that?
Completely agree. I think there was a thinking, and this is not any one corporation, but I think it was the thinking that we park our personal life at the door, in the parking lot, but when we open the door and come into a building, that's our work life. And the reality is it never ends. It's
right.
it's all together.
Right.
And I think because most of us work so many hours into the day and evening, and you bring everything with you. And I think back then we purposely asked people to park it,
mm-hmm.
park the conversation, mm-hmm. park the information. And I think for someone struggling, it must have been so extremely frustrating mm-hmm. to almost hide.
Yes.
Kind of what they were working through.
Yes, and that energy that
right.
took.
Zapped it all out of them.
It sucks it out
right.
of being
it's
able
gone.
To do your good work.
That's right.
So you have been a tremendous personal champion, and Booz Allen has supported us in our international work mm-hmm. now. You were with us in London at our second global summit, and you were with us in L.A. at our first. I mean, you've seen what's happening since we launched this in 2015, since we did our first summit in 2017, and then we did our second, and then we were already planning the third and all kinds of other things. What do you take from what you're seeing at these summits and these experiences in terms of where we're heading with this? What do you imagine? What do you want to see 3 years from now, 5 years from now in society and in the workplace?
When I think back to when we started, people, even good friends, couldn't tell me what they were feeling. And what I imagine and hope for is 5-10 years that we're all embracing it. I mean, you see it right now, and that's what I learned in both summits, is the arts community is embracing it. Again, it's the, you know, the arts, the corporations, the not-for-profits, the media. Everyone is starting to embrace it, Barbara, and for me, my hope, and I'm already seeing it, so it's not necessarily hope, it's already being seen, is that it becomes part of our mainstream conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Just as if I would say if I was struggling with a physical illness,
mm-hmm.
I would be bold enough, or, you know, I could have the courage. And I think that's what it is having the courage that I can say it, or any of us can say it, and know there's, number one, I can get the help I need, which is critical,
mm-hmm.
but know that it's okay, that we all live on this continuum. And at any given point in time, we're on that continuum.
Has it changed you doing this work?
It has. I think I'm much more empathetic and open. You know, it goes back to, was I as open to seeing it, not only in myself, but in other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you see your own tendencies. So I think it's made me a better person. But I think as a leader, I look for the signs. I look for, you know, I don't allow myself to just accept the I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's often what we did is I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And you just stop it.
Has it helped you as a parent?
Yes. Yes, as a parent. Yes, because I think children's lives are much more complicated today than they were when I was little. And I'm always looking for things that I could be thinking about, how to help them kind of work through a problem
mm-hmm.
that maybe back when I was growing up or generations before me, people weren't kind of courageous enough to ask those questions.
And they didn't teach their kids
That's
the language, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And my guess is that, because I hear it when you talk, I hear how you've adopted the language.
Right.
And my guess is that you're teaching that to the girls so that they too
right.
have that language to use.
Yep.
With each other and to talk with you and their friends, which is really lovely.
Yeah, model the words is what I try to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feel anxious, I tell them I feel anxious when I get up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's okay to feel nervous.
Are you nervous today?
Yeah.
Does these kinds of situations make you nervous or no?
No.
You do a lot of
no,
these.
No, not as much. But again, if you're standing in front of a room of 600 people and everyone's looking at you, what I try to encourage my girls is, I too get nervous.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
Know what you're going to say and you'll be fine.
Right. And we, our daughter, who you know, our girls, and one of our daughters was at an event that we were at together. Mm-hmm. And she got up in front of the group, and that's the first time she's ever done that. She's 18. And she said afterwards, I was scared to death. And I said, no one would have known.
No. Not at all.
And I think that message of you can be whatever you're you feel inside doesn't mean that it has to prevent you from doing your work or your job or what you want to do.
I want to thank Andrea for being one of my BFFs for all these years and for all that she's done to help change the culture of mental health. I want to thank her and Nicole for their tireless efforts to ensure that those who serve, their families, and our veterans have the help and support they need and deserve. And finally, I want to thank both of them for being champions who are helping me bring the focus of emotional health and well-being into the corporate sector. They're powerful women leaders in what has historically been and still is a primarily male-dominated sector. Some women in their positions might have been reluctant to raise an issue that might have been seen as too touchy-feely for their corporate colleagues. Not these two. Their certainty about the need to change the way we all talk about and address mental health and mental illness is changing minds, attitudes, and smashing outdated policies. I'm proud that they are both my friends. No matter what sector you work in, no matter what your line of work or the position you hold, we all experience the stress of our jobs and the challenges of life. Many of us are also dealing with mental health challenges. Some of us are aware of them, others are not. Many of our coworkers struggle in silence, sometimes feeling ashamed that they feel depressed, anxious, or have an eating disorder or a substance use disorder. Many of our friends and neighbors are dealing with family members who are struggling. And yet the vast majority of us carry on, we work, we take care of our families, and we contribute to society. Imagine what it might be like if we were all a bit more comfortable talking with each other about our mental health, comparing our struggles, our successes, and sharing the new tools that we've discovered. We talk about our physical ailments and remedies with each other. Why can't we do this about our mental health? Hopefully, someday we will. As always, thank you for listening to Inner Space. Check out changedirection.org and dcpentertainment.com to learn how you can join the Campaign to Change Directions, a week to change direction, June 9th through the 15th. Once again, I want to thank my wonderful team from DCP Entertainment for making this show possible. Y'all can follow me on Twitter at @bvandalen. Please use #innerspace on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. And please share your journey with us about emotional well-being.